Good morning. This is Patricia Kullberg, and I'm going to be speaking today with Dr. Anushka Shenoy, who is a resident in psychiatry at the Oregon Health Sciences University, and she is also one of the leaders of the current drive to unionize physicians in training at the university. Anushka Shenoy, welcome to KBOO and to the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When I heard that the house staff at OHSU was organizing, I was, of course, very interested because about 40 years ago in 1980, I was one of the leaders of an organizing drive at University of California, Davis, where I was in training to become a family physician. Back then, the big barrier to organizing was that we were considered legally to be students, not employees, even though we were working very long hours, very often without any kind of supervision, that is, we were working independently and we were getting paid for that work. Now, in 1999, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that residents in training were in fact employees and that they had the right to collective bargain and actually even the right to strike. And I believe across the country now, the majority of the big teaching institutions, the physicians in training are organized. And at OHSU, the house staff is organized into a union, which you're calling the OHSU House Officers Union. And you've been bargaining with management, I believe, now for about 10 months. But before we get to that, Anushka, can you paint a picture for our listeners of what it's like to work as a house officer?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that background. And thank you for your advocacy work many years ago at UC Davis to help set the stage for all the work we're doing now. House officers, interns, residents, and fellows, we finished our medical degrees, and this is our first job as a new doctor. So we tend to be the first person you see when you enter a hospital. We are called interns and residents because historically we used to live and spend a lot of time in the hospital. So for me, for example, my first 2 years of training, my internship, which is my first year of training, and then my second year, I was in the hospital for most of my work. I would see patients in the emergency room. I would treat them on the medicine wards when they came in for something like pneumonia or heart failure. And I would also see patients in the acute psychiatry inpatient unit. In addition to doing that during the day, interns and residents do the vast majority of overnight and weekend call at the hospital. So on any given weekend, there's psychiatrists in-house admitting patients who need acute hospitalization. There's surgery interns and residents who are taking care of patients after they've had major surgery or triaging patients who might need surgery. There's family medicine interns and residents who are either on call for their clinics or taking care of patients in the hospital. As you proceed through training, your role can evolve and you can do more outpatient work. So for example, if you came to see a psychiatrist at OHSU, it's very possible you would see someone like me, a resident, who's now in my fourth year of training and I see patients on my own. And we are busy.
Tell us how many hours roughly are you working and how about taking breaks and that kind of thing?
Yeah, those are great questions. Again, it really varies by specialty. When I was working on the internal medicine wards, I would frequently get pretty close to 80 hours a week. We're legally not allowed to work more than 80 hours a week in the hospital. And surgery residents frequently hit that or unfortunately even work more hours than that. Now that I'm outpatient, it's a little bit less. On an average week, it's probably more like 50 to 60 hours. And then when I have weekend call, of course, that increases the hours. And in terms of working conditions, I think it's important to think about pre-COVID and post-COVID. But even pre-COVID, we don't clock in and out like a lot of people do. When we are on call, we are on call. We don't have scheduled lunch breaks or scheduled times to take other types of breaks, even to lie down or to rest if we're on for 24 hours at a time. So it's pretty grueling work.
Yeah, I think I did some quick calculations of what your hourly wage is if you're working 80 hours a week, and it comes to around, I think, $15 to $20 an hour, which is a little low considering the nature of the work you're doing. So I think that's a nice segue into talking about what have been your demands in your collective bargaining process. Kind of update us on where you're at in that process and what the sticking points have been.
So our main issues have been fair compensation for the work that we do and having a real seat at the table to improve conditions for our patients and ourselves. So regarding compensation, as you alluded to, we are paid much less than non-resident physicians, which we understand is part of the way that hospitals run and make money. But we do want a salary that increases faster than inflation and that increases in a transparent way. We also want to be able to have enough money beyond that salary to be able to live close enough to the hospital to get to work when we're needed. So we're asking for a housing stipend to help with that, understanding that we are compensated quite far below market, and OHSU is in a part of town that's pretty expensive to live in. We also want some things that, honestly, I think folks in other industries would find pretty basic. We want OHSU to pay for the medical license that we have to have in order to practice medicine, as well as the exams we need to take while we are residents, in order to move forward in our training. All interns have to take step three, which is the third in a line of exams that tests our medical knowledge. That test can cost up to $1,200. And currently, we pay for that out of our own pocket while we're also dealing with the expenses of often moving to a new city, starting to pay our loans back, and on that about $15 an hour salary that can quickly get overwhelming. So, we're really looking for OHSU to treat us with the same respect that they treat nurses and other types of workers who require licensure to do our job. And then the other part of it I wanted to tell you about is we are working to have a seat at the table to improve conditions. We are in the hospital a lot. We really have a on the ground view of how the hospital works. So we're advocating for things that we feel are missing to improve patient care. For example, making sure we have enough time off so that we can rest and be our best selves for our patients. We're also advocating for adequate funding to do our job, things like surgical equipment so surgeons can see the delicate vasculature they're working on, or even the right type of microphone so that I can do telepsychiatry from my home so my patients don't have to go into the hospital. So we're really advocating to make sure that we have what we need, and perhaps more importantly, that the hospital and our patients have what they need.
A lot of what you're asking for would improve the lives of the house staff in very basic ways. I'm sure you know this, but our listeners may not, that suicide is the second leading cause of death among house officers, and that I have seen studies that suggest that up to a third of house staff struggle with symptoms of depression, and that the rates of divorce and substance abuse are very high among physicians in training, as well as high among physicians. And all of these, I believe, to be related to the kinds of time pressures and the enormous responsibility that house staff have to, and physicians have to work under. Does that accord with your experience?
Yes, absolutely. And as a psychiatrist, it's something I care deeply about. And I think it's interesting because the culture of physicians is even while we were unionizing to advocate for ourselves, we were often thinking about our patients and figuring out how can the hospital be better. But I think there's this other really important part, which is that in order for us to take care of our patients, we do have to take care of ourselves. And even before COVID, all the statistics that you're alluding to are spot on. We have a higher risk of suicide, a higher risk of psychiatric conditions than peers in different industries. We're tired, we're burned out. And I think about it as on a personal level. I've had two fairly urgent cesareans to deliver my two children, and I didn't want to have to think about whether my physician was rested or whether my anesthesiologist had a place to sit down close enough to the operating room so she could run in and be with me at a moment's notice. It's not good for me as a patient, and it's not good for me as a doctor. So I think a lot of the work we're doing is helping folks understand that we are people. We came into this line of work because we love it, and it takes a toll that it doesn't necessarily have to. And some of these basic things around having safe spaces, having enough money so we don't have to commute, you know, an hour into the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning. Those things really make a difference in our lives so we can help our patients.
I want to talk a little bit about the trends that I've observed over the past four decades or so in healthcare, and you've probably noticed some of this as well. There's been a huge trend toward privatization of hospital systems and pretty significant consolidation into large, usually hospital-based and fully integrated systems. And by that, I mean these big systems are in the business of delivering not just hospital care, but also primary care or specialty care or lab and radiology services, and sometimes their own nursing homes or even their own insurance programs. And one consequence of this is that over half of the practicing physicians now are employed, not owning their own practices and working independently, but are employed by these large private systems or by large government-sponsored systems like the VA. And over this period of time, the number of physicians grew by a factor of 1.5, while managers grew by a factor of 30. And so you see vastly increased administrative oversight of physician work and impingement on their clinical autonomy, unrelenting demands to see more patients and to assume more administrative tasks, and physicians and residents and interns are kind of have become profit centers for these large entities, corporate entities. How have these changes impacted or become apparent in your own unionizing drive or your own experience?
Yeah, those are really great questions. And the way that I think about it is that, you know, doctors are starting to realize, exactly like you said, medicine has been increasingly co-opted for a profit motivation. You know, I think doctors are taught to highly value expertise, right? Because we specialize to this insane degree. So for a long time, we've tended to think that we should leave hospital and healthcare administration to those who specialize in that. It's increasingly becoming clear that that is not in the best interests of our patients or for our own self-interest. Examples are what you talked about. You know, we don't get to choose as residents or often as employed physicians how many patients we see per hour. You know, family medicine doctors, I don't even know how many patients you see per hour, but even psychiatrists, the drive towards quote unquote productivity or seeing more patients in less time is incredibly demanding, because as bureaucracy and the complexity of the way medicine is paid for in this country has gone up, so has the administrative work that we need to do behind the scenes to adequately document the work that we do so that our employer can get paid for it. So I don't know the exact statistic on it, but I know that the amount of time that patients spend with doctors has gone down pretty dramatically over the last 10 to 20 years. And the percent of doctors' time that we spend behind a computer screen has gone up. So that's a huge burden.
Given all that, tell me why it is that more physicians don't unionize.
Yeah, so I think the first thing to say is that we are starting to organize, and we are actually, the OHSU is the last academic hospital on the West Coast to not have a resident union. So my first point is that this is starting to happen. It's slow. It's not as fast as other industries. I think there's a couple big reasons. One, doctors are incredibly busy, and it takes a lot of work to unionize, to educate a diverse group of people about how unionizing might be in your best interest. You know, I have surgery colleagues who were running around the hospital organizing people after working 80, 90, 100 hour weeks, and that is a lot to ask from anyone. Secondly, our jobs are very specific and very different from other people's jobs. So I think that it's taken some mutual education and collaboration between us and the large unions that represent other types of workers to figure out how best to meet our needs. I'll give you one example. All of our bargaining sessions have had to take place after 5 p.m. because you just can't get enough doctors free during the daytime to bargain. And then I think also this alludes to something we talked about earlier, where it's often difficult for doctors to internalize that their own health matters when it comes to taking care of patients. There is a very strong culture of these high achieving people who become doctors thinking that they should sort of just muscle through to focus on the good of the patient and not to look out for themselves. And changing that culture is really tough.
There is a culture that I remember and apparently is very persistent of, you know, be tough, don't be a whiner, just suck it up. Anushka, can you tell our listeners where they might find out additional information or follow your progress?
Yes. So I will start by directing you to the website, which is www.ohsuhou.org. That's where we have updates and all our most recent communications. You can also follow us on Instagram at OHSU_HOU, where sometimes the breaking news comes to Instagram first.
I want to wish you a lot of success in your current organizing drive. And thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with me today.
Yes, thank you so much for your interest in this. And I hope everyone has a safe holiday season.
We must fight for from the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War has always been the bosses' wiser. Power in a